Today at Reader's Corner, we welcome Lisa Napoli, author of Up All Night, Ted Turner, CNN, and the Birth of 24-Hour News. I'm Bob Custer. Welcome to Reader's Corner. In Up All Night, author and journalist Lisa Napoli tells how we went from an age of nightly news broadcast on three national networks to the age of 24-hour channels and constantly breaking news. The answer, thanks to Ted Turner, is an oddball cast of cable television visionaries, big league rejects, and non-union newbies. It was the summer of 1980 that this motley crew, somehow against all odds, launched CNN, mixing media history, a business adventure story, and great characters. Up All Night tells the story of a network that succeeded beyond even the wildest imaginings of its charismatic and uncontrollable founder and paved the way for the world we live in today. Born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, Lisa Napoli began her career as an unpaid teenage intern at CNN's New York Bureau in the summer of 1981. As a journalist, she has worked at the New York Times, Marketplace, MSNBC, and KCRW. She is the author of two previous books, Radio Shangri-La and Ray and Joan, which she discussed at the Sun Valley Writers Conference a few years ago. Lisa Napoli, welcome to Reader's Corner.
Hi there. How are you?
Just great. Great to be with you and to talk about your book that I so much enjoyed. You know, when you look at the demographic of Reader's Corner, I just have to assume there's a number of people who are listening who really don't have much of a recollection or a memory of those days when there were three networks whose hallowed commentators appeared each evening delivering 30 minutes of news, perhaps all the news anyone would get in the course of a day about what was going on around the world. So maybe you could help us understand what the beef was with that particular approach. What was life like in those days?
I'm so surprised that your audience is so young. I thought the public radio audience, and I put myself in this category, is older and does remember that. But either way, I'm happy to answer your question. because even those of us who were there, it's so hard to remember that there was a time when there wasn't news on at our fingertips all the time. And that was the culture then. Also, your audience, I would imagine, given the geographic audience you reach, remembers the early days of cable television, not the earliest days of cable television, but that was where Ted Turner made his first stab at conquering the universe, so to speak, by transmitting Channel 17, a little crummy station he had in Atlanta, all over the United States. And from there, he got dazzled by the technology, the capability of marrying cable, which was a utility then, not something designed to bring 100 or more channels into our home, marrying that with the satellite, which was a dazzling technology at the time. And basically, he had very little interest in news. It was more deploying that technology in a new way and getting some sort of signal out to the United States. And that's what was behind his move. There was a time, yes, when people didn't have television news, you know, when television news was the main delivery system for news, and it was limited to a certain period of time during the day. And that's unthinkable in this ecology that we're in right now, but that's how it used to be.
And didn't I read in your book that Ted Turner, and maybe it was someone else who worked for him, had a concern about advertisers' influence on those three networks, that everybody was getting the same kind of news, and that the commentators were in a sense, victims of this advertising that controlled the networks?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's always been the concern that an advertiser might push the journalistic side of things into a certain point of view. And definitely Ted Turner worried about that as far as the news went. You know, he felt like maybe we as consumers of news weren't getting the whole picture. But he was also concerned about the fact that the newscasts were so short and they were created by the same homogenous types of people out of New York City who'd gone to the same kinds of schools, who hung out with each other. It's actually very similar to a lot of the concerns people have about everything today that, you know, it's all foisted on us by this elite group of people out of DC or New York or Los Angeles, where I'm talking to you from right now, and that they're setting the agenda. And Ted's concern was also that television, not just television news, was wild and purveying values that were untoward for the family, which was ironic because his whole lifestyle was untoward for the family. But he was disturbed at the concept that children might be watching, you know, jiggling breasts and violence and all of the concerns that were coming up about television in the 1970s. And that requires remembering or thinking about, if you weren't there, the time that the 70s represented in our culture, which was this more permissive world that, of course, yielded the much more permissive world that we live in today, that was reflected on television, which was at that point still a relatively new medium.
Tell us about your experience at CNN.
Well, this book is not at all about my experience.
Right.
It's important to say that because I was reluctant to even include that information in the description of me. This book was born out of my interest in looking back at this different time in our world as far as news delivery, because it's such a polarizing conversation today. And I wanted people to step back and see that the news didn't always look like it does on cable now. And how did we get there? But to answer your question, I mean, I was a young kid in New York City in the late 70s, early 80s. I was going to college in the early 80s and was really interested in getting a job in the newspaper business, which at the time, this is 40 years ago, the newspaper business was deemed as dying, which is quaint because it's in such terrible trouble now and has been for that length of time. And basically by happenstance, wound up going to work as an intern at this place that was in the base of the World Trade Center called CNN. And now New York City at that point was not wired for cable. So I couldn't go home at night to Brooklyn and look at the place I was working. It just wasn't accessible. It was in very, very few homes. Both cable and CNN were in very few homes at that stage. Cable, as I said before, was brand new. And so I went to work there as an intern just basically to get experience like interns always do. And I was completely unaware of the media ecosystem and the changing media ecosystem that I had stepped into. I was just looking to get some experience and answer the phones. So it was fun and dazzling to be in a newsroom, as it is for anybody who's never been in an old-fashioned newsroom, because now, of course, everything is virtual and the energy isn't there the way it used to be. And that was even before this terrible pandemic. But it was an exciting and interesting time. I wound up doing other internships in the summers and wound up, when I got out of college, going down to Atlanta and working at the quote-unquote mothership, which I write about in the book, an old country club that Ted Turner and his minions bought and retrofit in record time to make into the headquarters of CNN. So all of this was born basically out of my interest in looking at where this place where I started my career happened, how it got to be the behemoth that it became.
And this was a non-union, low-wage scale operation at the beginning anyway, right?
Right. The only way that Ted Turner and his folks could get this thing launched was to launch it out of New York City or Washington, D.C., away from the unions and with incredibly low paid labor. Because, you know, again, it's so hard to step back and think about a time before 24-hour news, but no one had done this in television before. And laying out a business plan, for anybody out there who's ever laid out a business plan, is hard enough when it's all theoretical. But when it's theoretical about trying to anticipate the needs for news, it was virtually impossible at that point. And they'd crunched the numbers in a way that didn't allow for them to hire people even at a basic wage. So they basically hired people at minimum wage who were right out of school, who had no experience, and they created something called CNN College. And basically what they wanted to do was train these kids right out of school who'd had some broadcasting training in college, who were ready to go, eager to work, unafraid of working weekends and overnights, which of course anybody in the news business needs to be, even pre the 24/7 culture that we live in today. And they attracted people from far and wide who were eager to get their feet wet, get this experience. I mean, people called it like graduate school. You didn't need to go to graduate school if you went to work at CNN in the early days because you got such an incredible trial by fire in making decisions quickly, in dealing with technology quickly, and in working with some people who had vast experience who were constantly conveying that wisdom to you. So yes, it was a non-union shop, and that caused problems for it over the course of its becoming a bigger entity. But at the start, that's the only way they could get it off the ground.
You're listening to Lisa Napoli. She is the author of Up All Night, Ted Turner, CNN, and the Birth of 24-Hour News. You've touched on this a bit, Lisa, but could you tell us about Telstar, which really was the vehicle that enables Ted Turner to pull this whole thing off? And maybe a little bit about, we're not engineers in this business, of course, but help our listeners understand how it really worked for CNN.
Well, I'll go back even one step further than that. And most people listening probably don't remember the coronation of Queen Elizabeth. But when she was coronated, it posed an enormous problem for the three American television networks. I mean, it posed a problem for anybody in the world who wanted to cover it, because covering it in real time simply was not possible back then. Today, I would go anywhere with my iPhone and I could be a live camera from virtually anywhere on the planet. But back then, it was not possible. And the shenanigans that the networks had to go through to rush to air the film that was recorded of the Queen being elevated was so enormous. And I talk about that a little bit in my book. And just a few years after that, in the early 60s, came Telstar. And Telstar was... It was so phenomenal. Back when Telstar launched, the idea that because of this satellite, you could connect across the pond, so to speak, that you could connect the entire nation in real time was so phenomenally outrageous and eye-popping that millions of people tuned in to this experiment that the networks did together. The networks got together and with one another staged this proof of concept, if you will, of an exploration of the United States in real time, hopping around the nation to various points, from Seattle to South Dakota to Niagara Falls and various other points. Now, that sounds so ho-hum right now, but at the time, it was as revolutionary as a space shot. And that is what inspired Ted. That evolution of the satellite and the satellite's capacity to connect us inspired Ted. As I say, it wasn't the news that he was that interested in. He was more interested in using this technology to unite the nation, to transmit information around the nation. I think, and I hope I'm in the book that I make it much sexier than that, because it was really you know, any inventor's aha moment. That was, he didn't invent the technology, but he wanted to put it to his use when he learned about it.
So you mentioned Channel 17 earlier. Whatever comes before, there has to be something that leads a Ted Turner to whatever CNN becomes. And Channel 17 just seems like the first stage of this development.
Yes, it was. Although it's like everything with entrepreneurs. Everything is a series, or any of our lives. I'm not an entrepreneur, but everything leads to the next thing. In Ted Turner's case, it was this billboard company that he inherited from his father at an early age. And that was humming along and he decided he wanted to get into radio. And working in radio, selling ads on the radio, wasn't sexy enough for him. So then he bought this little Left for Dead television station in Atlanta on the UHF band, high up on the dial. It was hard to tune in. It wasn't network affiliated. Then he learned TV there. From there, he sent that station out after making some terrific business deals with local sports teams. He sent that team out regionally over cable to places that were TV deserts that had no other options at that stage. Well, there were few options for anybody at that stage in the 70s. And then from there, he got dazzled by that satellite capability of transmitting that little station all around the nation. So everything built, all fueled by this unbridled ambition and desire to conquer the world. The more he saw success, the more he wanted it. And media and technology were the ways for him to do that.
So I want to talk about Ted Turner, the person, because he's such an interesting character. I mean, there are moments when I'm reading you describe some of his antics, horrible antics. And I'm thinking, he sounds like Donald Trump all over again. He was both self-promoters of the highest order. And gosh, some of the anti-Semitic things that comes out of this guy's mouth and practices, letters that he sends where he's, you know, signing off as a Christian, knowing he's sending this letter to somebody who's Jewish. I mean, it's just outlandish. It's amazing in a way that he did succeed. But then I guess why should we be surprised in 2020 when we see what's going on around us today?
And further evidence of the stalking horse nature of it all, he did consider running for president. Now, it is amazing. My last book, as you mentioned before, was about Ray Kroc, propagator of McDonald's. And he was outrageous, too. And I think there was a time, I mean, certainly if you read the story about the recent McDonald's CEO and his terrible fall and terrible behavior, it's shocking to read about it and to know about it today. But back in the 70s, 80s, that kind of frat boy, larger than life, no filter attitude was not, sadly, uncommon. It was actually, I'm writing a book right now about the founding mothers of NPR and all the struggles that they went through to get to the point where they became household names. And in the 60s and 70s, women routinely dealt with at the workplace what today would happen and in an instant be a Me Too headline. So that ethos was the Ted Turner ethos. And confusingly, most of the people who worked for him, I haven't heard otherwise, and I wasn't looking for this, but most of the people who worked for him, men and women, black and white, seemed, and Jewish, seemed to find him absolutely this charismatic, charming leader. So yes, set against the backdrop of the creation of this network, was, you know, with all the polarization of cable news today, I thought it was important that people know that Ted Turner was not a politically correct Jane Fonda, no nukes, peacenik. This is way before he met and married Jane Fonda. He was a wild, conservative man, and he did not launch CNN with any sort of agenda. As I keep saying, he wasn't even interested in the news back then. But the idea that he went and met with Fidel Castro, the avowed enemy at the time of the United States, of many parts of the world, and smoked cigars with him, and then tried to come back and give a videotape of Fidel Castro giving an early endorsement of CNN to his folks at CNN who said, no, that is not going on the air, is so preposterous that I just, you know, who can write fiction? I mean, it was such an amazing concept. I hope this gets made into a movie because just the visuals of it are so startling and it's incredible.
You're listening to Lisa Napoli. She's the author of Up All Night, Ted Turner, CNN, and the Birth of 24-Hour News. I think it's pretty clear from reading your book that Ted Turner could not do all this himself. He had to rely on people around him. I referred to some of them as the oddball cast, but Reese Schoenfeld comes to mind. And when you look back on it all, who deserves credit aside from Ted Turner in really making this happen at CNN?
Oh, well, Reese Schoenfeld, without question. Yeah. There were several hundred people who were there at the very beginning, and every single person, whatever their job title, worked endless hours and created to the formation of it, because no one really knew exactly what it was going to look like when it started, like many a startup. But Reese Schoenfeld, may he rest in peace. He just passed away at age 88. He was Ted Turner's first president, and he was basically the chief architect, not the literal architect, but the figurative architect of what CNN used to look like. They had a denouement a couple of years in. He was ousted, but he was there from the beginning, and he was the man who Ted entrusted with the creation. And just by way of description of Reese Schoenfeld, because many people don't know his name, he did go on and co-create the Food Network. He had a storied career. But even before he came to work for TED, he'd had a very interesting career in that he was crusading against the network news and the brevity of it and the homogeneity of it for years. And it had been his dream for many years to find a way to bust the network triopoly as far as news was concerned. He worked in the newsreel business as a young man. That's how he put himself through law school. And he was dazzled by the concept that not that much news got out there. Now, that again is so hard for us to imagine today when we are drowning in information from every direction and from every point of view. But in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and before that too, there was not the capability to get that information out there. Mm-hmm. And so Reese had, that was his crusade, and it was a happy collision of timing that he met Ted and that Ted asked him to be his chief person.
So there seems to be two events, and I hope we have time for you to talk about both of them briefly, that really define CNN and bring it into the respectable phase of its journey that it deserved. In the early days, of course, I think you refer to what outsiders and insiders considered CNN to be delivering as junk food news. But then the coverage of President Reagan's shooting plays a role in changing that perception. And then little Jessica also has a role in that. I wonder if you could comment on those.
Sure. What I wanted to do, this is not as we call in the biography world, a cradle to grave of CNN. And it would be a grave if you talked about where we're at with the news business today, especially cable news. But this is just a slice of CNN's early existence. And I wanted to show how it built respect, because it was enormously respected at a certain point. And part of that respect came from its front people who behaved themselves so well and somberly on the air during terrible events like the assassination attempt against President Reagan, and later the Shuttle Challenger, Tiananmen Square. Of course, most people who are old enough remember the Gulf War coverage and CNN, which really established it. But basically, what they had to do was fight against this concept that news was what a bunch of people in New York said it was, and instead switch the brains of the nation and ultimately the world into turning on CNN and watching news unfold. And of course, what we have today is that gone way out of whack. But in those early days, that was a very unseemly concept. And it took things like the unfolding urgency of an assassination attempt against a president where, as is documented, it wasn't very clear what had happened. And that was uncomfortable for the news media to be covering it as they're finding out this grave information and getting some of it wrong and some of it right. Thankfully for CNN, it got a lot of it right. Up through that rescue of a little girl in a well, from a well in Texas several years later, that turned the world on to the concept of watching news unfold. And, you know, what I'm trying to do in this book is get people to think about what is news? How should news be delivered? How do I want to receive news? And who is it who's making the news? So that's the unspoken subtext in my writing this wild story of this wild time that yielded what is now such a polarizing force today.
And I guess if anything, and you point this out to some extent, CNN would change not just the actual coverage of the event, but then I think what you call the aftermath, where it goes on and on and on.
Right, right. Right. And it is, you know, it is so hard to remember that it used to be you would hear about an event on the news, you'd read the analysis in the newspapers or maybe hear a commentator a couple of days later, and that would be that. And right. What CNN did was change our expectation that it would, I've thought a lot about this at the beginning of the pandemic. What would a pandemic have looked like, not back in 1917, but even just 40 years ago? How would the coverage of a pandemic been pre or at the start of CNN or of any major, this is not an event, this is an ongoing crisis, obviously, but how would it look? And if you, one answer to that is looking at presidential campaign coverage. And of course, what's happened as a result of all this news is that the campaign season has elongated to 4 years. And that's what happened, sadly, with our politics and basically, in essence, destroyed so much, as well as given rise to all kinds of craziness that we don't need to talk about here. But yes, it has completely and indelibly changed how we look at the world around us. And that really is what news is. And I wish I could do something about it. All I could think to do about it was write a book that hopefully people will read to see. I look at the early beginnings of the very first television live shot, way before any of the stuff that we've been talking about occurred, as a way of showing that there's always been this human nature at peering in at another world. That's human nature. And how we peer into that other world and how we discuss it with other people, that's the thing that's changed. But that desire to do those things has always been there.
Well, it's not that difficult to understand Ted Turner's interest in the 24-hour news cycle. I think the question is, did Ted Turner really have any idea that he would not only create and enable a 24-hour news cycle, but then that would morph itself into an enabler for this extreme political partisan divide that we have when networks start choosing up sides and getting more and more out there on the extremes rather than the center? One thing's for sure, when you look at those three networks back in the day, they were in the center left, but they were still in the center compared to what's going on today.
Yes, I'm glad you said that, because it's important to remember that Fox News didn't start till 1996. And it was only, you know, there were criticisms of CNN and its impact on the news up until 1996. But for 16 years, it existed basically in its own world. Of course, the world was changing. The internet was, you know, taking off. All media had to morph with that and with CNN. But then when Fox News came along with its extremely decided point of view, that's what really changed everything. So yes, it is interesting to go back and look at the 70s and look at 60s, look at President Nixon, his hatred. Every president hates the news business in some form or fashion.
We have to close it here, Lisa, but I want to say there's so much we didn't have a chance to talk about, which is the reason why people have to get out and get this book. But there's just so much that's so interesting about the history of how this all came about. You've done a great job of putting it all together in one fell swoop. The book is Up All Night, Ted Turner, CNN, and the Birth of 24-Hour News. Lisa Napoli, thanks so much for joining us today at Reader's Corner.
Thank you so much for having me.
Reader's Corner is presented by Boise State Public Radio. The engineer for today's show is Eric Jones. I'm Bob Kustra. Please join me next week as we talk to today's leading writers about the ideas and issues that help shape our world at Reader's Corner.